Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And my guest today is joining me all the way from Florida. I've got Dr. Mohammed Alamir from Aviv Clinic in Florida. He originally started in internal medicine and did that for over a decade and then has joined this clinic for a number of reasons, which I will have him kind of share a little back history with us as well. But he specializes in Lyme disease, obviously, right? What are we talking about every day on this show? And we're going to dive into a couple of different things. If you watch the news at all, you probably are aware that many, many states are now alerting all of us that there have been some excessive patients coming into the emergency rooms with tick bites or possible Lyme infection. And so I want to kind of ask him, what do you think that's all about, right? Which is, I never want to hear somebody have a Lyme diagnosis, but truly it's really great information because it's spreading awareness. There's not enough awareness about this disease, as I'm sure many of you listeners know. And so I want to just kind of pick his brain a little bit on that. And then we're just going to dive into many different topics. So I'm really looking forward to the show. And this is actually Dr. Mo. So Dr. Mo, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Of course, Tanya. Thank you for having me.
So let's just kind of, if you could give the listeners just a little bit of background on you and, you know, kind of I always think it's interesting to find out why people got into the Lyme world.
Yeah. So I'm Dr. Mo Alamir. I'm originally from New York and New Jersey and had my internal medicine practice up there for 10 years before I moved to Florida 5 years ago. And being from the Northeast, tick bites and Lyme disease is nothing foreign to us, something that we see on an acute basis all the time. But, it wasn't too far into my practice where I had some patients describe that they had the classic Lyme, you know, tick bite, the chronic, the bullseye rash and some of the fevers and pains, et cetera. And they were treated appropriately with the antibiotics and they felt better. But it wasn't until a couple of months after they finished treatment that they came back and said, hey, I'm having a lot of these symptoms again. And when we retreated with the antibiotics, the symptoms went away. And then again, they came back. When consulting this patient with some infectious disease specialist, he was told there's no such thing as chronic Lyme. And this wasn't that long ago. This was about 10, 15 years ago. And
we still hear it every day.
And we still hear it
unfortunately,
today.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Correct. But there is a condition of a persistent, long-term Lyme disease. I mean, this is something that's real. The spirochete that causes the disease can still live inside and envelop itself. That was the first patient that made me open my eyes. Hey, we need to really understand Lyme, not just in the acute, but in the chronic stage. And, unfortunately in medicine, if we can't find the answer, then often we just default, it's not real or it's in your head. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. So that kind of set forth, okay, let's research, how do we diagnose it? And more importantly, how do we treat it?
Because the
appropriate treatment, getting to the cause of the symptoms is the key.
Yes, no, that's, and I just want to extend my gratitude for you, for being curious, right? And wanting to kind of take a deeper dive into what this is, because we oftentimes get dismissed, right? We get gaslit. And that was a great example. Oftentimes we say it's in your head if we think that we don't know what it is, right? And many doctors just kind of go with that. So we appreciate the ones that stay in the community and really kind of take a dive, a deeper dive into what is this, because there's more than just a handful of people coming in and I'm thinking that they're crazy, right? So there might be something behind this. So, and that's probably a lot of the fun being a researcher as a doctor, I would think anyways, kind of like a challenge. So Anyways, so let's go ahead and start with, you know, what I mentioned when I started the show. What is with all this activity in the ERs lately with tick bites or random illnesses from Lyme disease? And how do you think these facilities are handling them? Do you feel that they're handling them appropriately, right? Are they offering people a week of antibiotics and sending them on their way? Like, I don't know. I don't know how much kind of information you have with the stories that are out with all of these cases coming into the ER.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. Anytime you see a specific disease kind of rising, there's usually two things that come about it. The common thing with most diseases on the rise are awareness. I think because of people like you, Tanya, getting the word out, you know, with the advent of the internet and, you know, the WebMD, Dr. Google, and now ChatGPT, you know, people can research their symptoms and then get, you know, a differential diagnosis that will include Lyme disease. So people are more aware. That's one thing. But I think the other thing is, you know, Lyme disease is a tick-borne illness and tick bites are on the rise, partly because of weather changes. You know, it used to be just in the Northeast area, just, you know, the classic medical school question was, somebody goes to Connecticut out for a hike in the woods and gets a tick bite and there's a bullseye rash. And it's very, very classic, but it doesn't have to be that transition, that area. You know, the ticks are everywhere in the U.S. And yes, specific ticks cause Lyme disease and other ticks can cause other diseases. So not every tick bite will necessarily lead to Lyme, but I think as people go out more, outdoor activities, hiking, and how urbanization of rural areas is happening. So, you know, if you go to any, you know, your childhood home and you say, oh, if you just drive a couple miles out, it's just the middle of nowhere. Now there's towns and there's suburbs and they just keep growing and growing. So I think part of it is humans are just going out into where these ticks used to be as well. So that could be another reason why the rates have gone up. So when you take that those combination of things, I think that's what we're seeing.
That's very interesting that you say that. Yes, because who doesn't live in a town that used to be full of fields, right? Like empty fields. And now they're subdivisions with homes crammed in there. So that's really interesting that you said that because I never actually thought about that. And so it makes sense, you know? And I know I had a guest, and of course, I'm going to say Lyme brain, can't recall her name, but she was a journalist that I had joined me a couple of years ago. And we talked about kind of global warming and a lot of things that may also be involved in that with it being more on the rise. So question on that, what is your take as a doctor in this field when somebody has a tick bite, right? Do you say, get the tick tested and wait several weeks to get the results? Are you one of those doctors that say better safe than sorry, let's get some antibiotics? Because, you know, I'm just a Lyme patient in the Lyme community, and I throw out my opinions about things all the time, right or wrong, right? But really, a lot of us don't even know what's right or wrong. You know, everybody has their own opinion, including many of these Lyme literate doctors. And so we never know. So just your take on it. Is it better to be safe than sorry? Or should we be testing these ticks and waiting for results?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, number one, if you have a confirmed tick bite and if the tick is still on you, proper removal, I think, is the first step.
Yes.
Because that's always the thing. You know, often we have this tendency to just kind of try to rip it off, but, you know, doing the right tweezers, perpendicular, removing it so its mouth doesn't break off. I mean, I think all of those are important. You know, I think a good clinician will always take the full picture. So, you know, if you are in an area that is very prevalent for Lyme, if the rash looks similar, you know, pathognomonic of the bullseye rash that we talked about, I think it's always a good idea to get the tick tested, but you don't have to wait for the results to treat either. So, you know, treat and get tested and get the tick tested so you can confirm, hey, yes, in fact, you did the right treatment. And if you did, then great, you got ahead of it. But let's say the tick came back negative for Lyme or it came back for Bartonella or something else. Chances are you might have cross-covered with your treatment, but okay, if the harm was, okay, you did the wrong antibiotic or unnecessary antibiotic, yes, there is a push in medicine to reduce unnecessary use of antibiotics because that can affect your gut microbiome, et cetera. But the most important patient is the patient in front of me. And if I have a clinical suspicion, I'm going to treat. I'm not going to wait for the test.
I love that. And that's a great answer because I do. It's like, it's almost no harm, no foul, right? If you're not somebody who generally takes antibiotics, right, then is there really trouble to take a couple weeks of doxycycline while you're waiting for the tick test to come back. Like I've always better safe than sorry, because me as a chronic sufferer for 13 years, right? Like I'd never want to go down that road again. So if I can help spread awareness about somebody not going down that journey, then I'm going to do it, right or wrong, but it's my opinion, right?
Well, for sure. You have to be your own advocate. And that's why you really need the full picture. You know, if the clinical picture fits, clinical suspicion is enough to treat. You know, I teach medical students, I teach residents, and I say, you know, listen, your clinical judgment is going to be the main North Star for how you're going to treat. The test will just confirm or rule things out for you. And, you know, it'll be good kind of data to have the tick analyzed. So that way, you know, if an ER gets it analyzed and they have another person come in the next day, then they can kind of, you know, build upon that and then have that data to help others.
Right. More data, the more information we can gather to help others. So you had mentioned removing the tick properly, right? So let's kind of talk about, and for the listeners out there, and I don't know, Dr. Mo, you can give me your opinion on this as well. You can go on Amazon and find a little tick removal kit, right? So what do you feel the proper way to remove a tick is? And then what are some of the things that people can do for prevention of tick bites?
Yeah, no, and you're right. It always starts with prevention. So the best way to treat Lyme is not get it in the first place. Yeah. And that means not getting bit by a tick. So, you know, I'm in Central Florida in the middle of summer. The last thing I want to hear is, hey, wear pants instead of shorts. But if you're going to go out hiking in a wooded area, I would wear pants, tuck your pants legs into the socks. Whenever you come back from a hike or an outdoor outing, do a full body check. Make sure you don't have a tick bite anywhere. The same goes with your pets. Obviously, you're not going to put pants on your pets, but you just have to be careful and have them checked as well. So that's number one. But if, in fact, you do get bit, proper removal is key. So, you know, the key is you can, and you don't have to buy a fancy kit. I mean, it could be any kit you find on Amazon or even a good pair of tweezers. And the key is to remove the tick perpendicularly. So you don't tug and pull on one side or the other, but you just completely remove it straight out of your skin. And that's to ensure that you're removing the full tick with its mouth, because when it's on you, its mouth is biting you and literally inside you. So if you pull it out perpendicularly, then you're going to get the mouth out. Because if you break the mouth off and the mouthpiece is still in there, the spirochete, that organism that causes Lyme, literally could still be in the mouth infusing into you. So doing that and then proper antiseptic, you know, cleaning on the outside. And then being vigilant for the symptoms and getting properly treated with the right antibiotics. That's still the mainstay of treatment.
Yeah, I agree. So, and that's good too. And there's, you know, for my little fur baby, I use one of those extra sticky pet rollers, like lint rollers. Mm-hmm. And I lint roller, of course, I feel for her too. You know, I feel on her body, but those little lint rollers, especially if it's a tick that maybe hasn't been embedded yet, they're great, right? And then, of course, for the listeners who may not be aware, the dryer is what is going to kill those ticks. If you come home, you want to throw your clothes, don't bother with the washer, right? Because the washer is not going to kill them, but a hot heat dryer for, what, 10, 15 minutes is what's going to kill them?
Correct.
Yeah, so that's always a great thing to do. So as far as, and you touched on it a little bit, testing. It sounds like you do a lot of clinical testing as well as the testing, you know, labs. Is there a specific labs that you like? Do you do a little bit of both? And of course, it sounds like you also cater to, you know, each specific need.
For sure. And, you know, whether it's acute or chronic Lyme, you know, blood tests are looking for antibody titers, usually to see if, you know, in fact, your immune system has responded to the organism causing Lyme. And typically there are two general types of antibodies. There's an IgM and an IgG. The IgM typically is elevated if you have an acute infection. The IgG usually is positive if it's a chronic infection. And I say usually because they're not perfect tests. Often there are different bands, as you know. And if you have a certain amount of bands, that would be enough to be diagnostic. But some people often miss the cutoff of bands by one or two bands. And they're told, oh, you don't have it. But clinically, they present that way. And especially in my practice, we tend to see chronic Lyme patients, meaning they're past the acute stage. They got the tick off them. They did the antibiotics, but they're still having symptoms. And if that means that the spirochete, that organism that causes Lyme, is still in the body, and it tends to envelop itself in something called a biofilm. So it's protecting itself from your immune system. So sometimes, depending on when you test, the blood test can show up all negative. Your immune system is not responding to it because it's protected itself. And for whatever reason, whether it's a stressor or just luck of the draw, when you have that biofilm destroyed and it releases its endotoxin and it triggers the immune system, then your titers could be elevated. So those blood tests aren't perfect, especially for chronic Lyme. So what we try to do...
Dr. Mo, can I interrupt you right there for a second? Because I do hear a lot or see a lot on social media, people talking about, hey, I'm going to go in and get a blood test done for Lyme disease. And they will oftentimes talk about, my doctor says to do this to try to bring it out in my body. Is there any real science to that? Because you kind of were just talking about, you know, what may or may not be detected. Is there things that people should actually be doing prior to getting a test for Lyme disease to maybe make it more accurate or maybe make it pick it up on it easier?
Well, you know, there's a reaction that the body has to Lyme. It's called often people will call it a Herx reaction, or it's called a Jarisch Herxmeyer reaction. For sure they'll say Herx. That is basically your body responding to the endotoxin that the spirochete is releasing when the biofilm is destroyed. So for some people, they'll try to do different things almost to break through that biofilm so they get the reaction so that the test will come up positive. You know, it's hard for me to recommend doing a specific thing just to get the test positive. But I will say most treatments will cause it to be positive because you're destroying the biofilm. So for example, the main treatment we use, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, I tell my patients, listen, you might experience a Herxmeyer reaction during treatment because we are literally destroying the biofilm, and it's the swan song of the spirochete. It's going to release its toxin. You're going to have a reaction, but it's a sign that A, it confirmed you had it, and B, that we are destroying it and you're going to get better. So it's something to look out for, but you know, I always say, you know, the test is there to help with the clinical picture, to help rule in or rule out if needed. But if you have all the proper history, the proper clinical findings, and you know, the blood test will help me one way or the other, push it one way or the other. But the clinical symptoms like the brain fog, like you mentioned the Lyme brain, we have tests to specifically see dysfunction within the brain that could be from Lyme. So for me, that's clinically more important because I can actually see the consequence of your symptoms in the brain. You know, same thing with your cardiovascular system. You know, Lyme disease can cause heart blocks, and then we can test for that as well. So there are a lot of other clinical things that are a little bit more useful to act on than just the blood test itself.
Okay. Yeah. And I appreciate that because, you know, some of the specialty labs that we can go through, they're very expensive, you know, and it's oftentimes a financial struggle for us to go through this journey. And so I think that people really need to allocate their resources effectively. And I think oftentimes maybe a super expensive test from iGenX may not be the way to go, right? If you can get a clinical diagnosis with somebody based on your history, your symptoms and stuff like that, just, you know, again, every individual is individualized, right? And so they need to do what's right for them, but more tests are maybe not always the best, right?
For sure. Exactly. I always say only do a test if it's going to change your management.
There you go. I like that. There you go. So when you mentioned acute versus a chronic infection, so in your opinion, what is, obviously acute is, you know, fresh bite or whatever. When do you consider it a chronic
Lyme? Most definitions to describe chronic define it as, okay, it's past the 6 month mark of having your symptoms. And I tend to subscribe to that's a reasonable amount of time to say, hey, if it's happening more than 6 months out from the original bite, then clinically that can qualify. Some definitions still insist on having the positive IgG titers, but some people, depending on their immunity, they might lose those titers. It doesn't mean that the Lyme is gone. It's just their immune system hasn't been able to mount that long-term response. So, you know, but I would go with the timeline first, and then depending on the definition, if you want to use those long-term titers, you can or not.
Right. And that's what I've always believed too, is about the 6 month mark. Yeah. So if you have somebody, fresh tick bite, bullseye rash, major symptoms right away, whatever. What is your first initial course? Is it because there's a lot of miscommunication out there about how much of an antibiotic is appropriate to hopefully eradicate it for good?
Correct. And, you know, I've had clients go through, you know, the battery of antibiotics and infusions and et cetera. In general, doxycycline, that's always my go-to antibiotic. That's always first line. You know, most people are treated for at least 2 weeks, but can be longer. I don't always go for repeat blood testing to see if the IgM titers are gone after a month, because again, with depending on the immune system, that could go back and forth. But usually if there's a clinical resolution, most of my clients I end up putting on for 3 weeks to make sure I get eradicated all. Sometimes I do go with the history. So if there's a very short amount of time from the tick bite to removal, sometimes that can guide you a little bit, but not always. You know, I can't always rely on that.
Okay. And that's interesting. And obviously, again, I'm a Lyme patient. I'm not a doctor like you are, Dr. Mo, right? You're the one with all the studies, all the smarts. But my belief has always been that it should be a 6 to 8 week cycle of antibiotics, because you've got the life cycle of 28 days. You don't have any thoughts on that? Or you still think that oftentimes just up to 3 weeks could be okay?
Well, you're right about the life cycle. But I've had a few clients treated that you know, usually 100 milligrams twice a week, or I'm sorry, twice a day. Most treatments, you know, are 2 weeks to 3 weeks. If there is a specific clinical comorbid like disease, so like you can have the Lyme, the bullseye rash, some of the myalgias and everything. But if you're having like extreme arthritis, like there's a specific joint that is significantly inflamed, then I would go out to like a month of treatment, because that means it's kind of enveloped inside the joint. And I've had a couple of patients where their knees almost look like a rheumatoid arthritis knee or a gout knee, but it was actually from the Lyme. And in those cases, I did a full month treatment. But technically, just the actual acute treatment, most of the time it's 10 days to 3 weeks. Again, I've had clients go for months, but often that's where you're kind of getting to the dangers of antibiotic resistance and kind of the gut microbiome issues, because a lot of the studies don't show that treating that long is necessarily better at removing the acute Lyme infection. Now, if somebody was presenting with like chronic Lyme symptoms pretty quickly, even before the 6 month mark, like let's say, like I had that one patient I mentioned at the beginning, you know, just within a few weeks of stopping the antibiotics, a lot of the symptoms came back. So in that case, I actually did another full course. But for most people, most of the patients I've treated, usually once you get past that 3 week mark, they're stable.
Okay. And I hear that a lot, and I still have in my head stuck 6 to 8 weeks, and I am not a fan of antibiotics. No part of me is a fan of any most Western medicine, but I 100% believe that, you know, fresh bite, fresh infection, antibiotics is certainly the way to go. And so when I say to people, yeah, I think 6 to 8 weeks, it's not because I love antibiotics by no means. I just feel that with catching that life cycle and just, you know, better safe than sorry type of thing. So again, all doctors have different inputs, and I always love to have it, right? Because we need to be our own advocate, and we need to go with what we believe and what we feel in our gut on how we want to move forward with a specific doctor. So thank you for kind of letting me dive into that a little bit further, because it's a hot topic out there. And I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah, no, agreed. And the life cycle, that is true, given a life cycle of the spirochete that hasn't been treated. Meaning if you just left it on its own, it's natural life cycle. But once you start treatment, you kind of impede that life cycle from continuing. And that's why if you do it at least for the 3 weeks, you're going to catch the vulnerable states in that cycle to prevent it from propagating. But like I said, I've had plenty of patients where I did have to extend it longer.
Right. Okay. And as far as when somebody gets the initial bite, how long does it take to kind of start moving through your body and really doing, you know, because there's talk, you know, oh, you got to catch the bite within 48 hours or, you know, a week, or if you don't have symptoms, is there any type of a timeline for that as well?
The sooner the better.
The sooner the better.
Official thing I can go with that.
And that's why go ahead and send the tick off, right? Go ahead and treat while you're waiting for the results.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay. So now I'd love to talk about kind of what you do at a V clinic, kind of some of the modalities that you have. I know you mentioned hyperbaric oxygen chamber, but I'd like to also kind of dive in. I always find it interesting to hear different perspectives from different practitioners on, is there a specific order that you need to manage these in? You know, some practitioners like to start with building the immunity or detoxing or address mold or parasites, or, you know, they kind of have an order. And again, everybody is individualized, but is there even kind of just an umbrella of a process that you take at your clinic?
Yeah, I think that the general umbrella is, before anybody even starts any treatment, we really like to do our thorough assessment. So the assessment does involve blood tests, and you know, there are co-infections. You know, it's not always just Lyme by itself. There's Bartonella.
Doesn't go alone, right?
No, it doesn't. So I think the assessment is critical. So we're doing blood tests for all the other tick-borne illnesses. We're doing cognitive analyses, brain scans that can actually show decreased metabolism in specific parts of the brain. And all of these things are done together. You know, we do a whole cardiovascular workup. I mentioned the heart blocks that people can get. And then diet, you know, allergies, all these other things play a role. And then other issues like other toxicities can make an impact.
Yeah. Okay. And I love that. It sounds like you kind of do, you know, the whole package, kind of we're not just band-aiding things. We're going to get to the root of, you know, yes, we want to know what specific issues are, but there's kind of a root of that you need to go to first.
Correct. And once we do that assessment, and this assessment, most of my patients are seeing the medical doctor, they're seeing the dietitian, they're seeing the exercise physiologist, the neuropsychologist, you know, the physical therapy team, if there's pain or gait issues, all of these people are seen by the whole team. And that way, when we do the treatment, you know, we're really trying to tackle the disease in multiple ways. We're on a metabolic level, because, you know, often people can have Lyme fatigue and all these other issues, and it's on a cellular level. Their mitochondria are disturbed, and they're unable to make the energy they need to. There's destruction of cells, whether it's in the brain, in the muscle, in the heart. So we want to regenerate new cells. Often people will have an inflammatory response to Lyme, and they have destruction of blood vessels. So we want to grow new blood vessels. So our treatment, you know, you mentioned it, hyperbaric oxygen, we use it in a very specific way to address all these things at the same time. So we're reducing inflammation, regrowing healthy cells, improving blood flow, improving energy metabolism, and also destroying the actual spirochete and destroying the actual organism that's causing this. So we don't have to kind of say, hey, we have to do this first or that first. After we do a full assessment and confirm, we can make a difference. The hyperbaric oxygen in the specific protocol that we're doing, this is addressing all these things at the same time. And that's why I always like to make the point, not all hyperbaric is created equal. You know, you might see somebody in a soft chamber, like a little zip-up bag in their home. People call that hyperbaric, but medically, we don't call that hyperbaric. Hyperbaric really involves hard chambers, and they could be a mono chamber, somebody lying the horizontal, or what we have in our clinic are multi-place chambers, large chambers where you sit inside comfortably. And
that sounds much more appealing than
it's a lot easier
than
to
one
do,
of those
sure.
little, especially for people that, you know, might be claustrophobic a little bit.
Yeah. For sure. So if you can sit in a room or in a large airplane, you know, then you're going to be comfortable in our chambers. And the protocol we administer is really the key. You know, our program was developed over the last 15 years by Dr. Shai Efrati, using a principle of using the body's own mechanisms to heal itself. So what we mean by that is your body needs a trigger to heal itself. And one of the biggest triggers is something called hypoxia, low oxygen. If you're in a low oxygen or hypoxic state, that's a dangerous situation, and that would be a good trigger for your body to say, I need to replace the cells that are about to die from low oxygen. I need to grow blood vessels. I need to improve my energy metabolism. The problem is we don't want to put you in hypoxia because it's a dangerous state. So we use hyperbaric oxygen in a specific way to fluctuate oxygen levels, to get your oxygen levels very, very high, which has its own benefit, and then back to normal. and very, very high, back to normal, back and forth, up and down, up and down. And that specific fluctuation tricks your body, makes it think it's in a low oxygen state when you were in the normal relative to the high. And that triggers the body to produce stem cells to replace the cells that are about to be injured. It's going to grow new blood vessels, improve mitochondrial function. And that's how we can actually help clinically and physiologically, the body heal from Lyme, kill the organism and rebuild.
Interesting. And I wasn't aware. I guess they have like soft shell things that you can have at your home. Because I do know, I've only seen the type of chambers, kind of like an enclosed MRI type of thing, yep. Right? Where you lay in there. But I wasn't aware. I thought that people, they just kind of set it up to get you into that, that deep oxygen kind of, because initially when I learned about this years ago, it was from scuba divers, right? That damage their ears, get
the bends.
Of course I can't, the bends. Yes. Yeah. The bends. And that's what I kind of thought it was for. And then as I went through my Lyme journey, I hear more and more about it, but I don't know specifics on it because it's a process, right? Like you just don't get in it, sit in it for 10 minutes. Like your body has to go down. And so the way that you monitor it going up and down is kind of a key thing. Is that what I'm understanding?
The key of the protocol is the fluctuation. And you're right that our treatments are 2 hours long. And the typical protocol for the best results is 2 hours a day. And in those 2 hours, we're going to a pressure level of 2.0 atmospheres. So you're right to bring up diving because that's like diving 33 feet under sea level. And when you're breathing 100% oxygen with a mask at 2.0 atmospheres, your oxygen level is 17 times higher than normal, which has its benefits. Hitting high oxygen gets oxygen to the cells that need it. And at that high pressure and high oxygen level, that actually destroys the spirochete and destroys that biofilm. But the fluctuation actually happens not with the pressure going up and down. It actually has to do with the mask. So you breathe 100% oxygen with a mask for 20 minutes, and then you take the mask off. Our chambers, because they're large multi-place chambers, they're pressurized with normal air. So the oxygen is through the mask. And when the mask is on, oxygen level is 17 times higher than normal. When the mask is off, your oxygen level goes to normal because the ambient air is just 21%, just like we're breathing now. So that normal oxygen is perceived by the body as a low oxygen state. And that's all happening while you're under pressure. So the
so
protocol
you're actually
is cool.
Removing this mask
throughout the actual 2 hour
session.
Correct. You got it. And you're right. It takes 10 minutes to go to that pressure level because we're pressurizing the chamber and it's like diving, as you're descending. And while you're in there for the 2 hours, you're at pressure and the mask is just fluctuating the oxygen up and down. And that's the key to getting the body to trigger factors to release these stem cells, blood vessels, mitochondria, et cetera.
Interesting. Ah, I love learning all this new stuff. So when they're in there, do you talk to the patient? Does the patient, be like, okay, time to take your mask off, and the patient just takes their mask off, or how does that work?
So yeah, and then that's where our clinic really kind of does it the best, where we have an inside attendant with you in the chamber. And the chamber, they're big enough to fit 14 people inside. Nice chairs, sitting comfortably. There's an inside attendant with them. So
that's a really, really good thing because a lot of us are claustrophobic. I honestly could not imagine being in one of those.
Right. So if you're sitting there, the inside attendant's with you, the first 10 minutes, everybody has their mask off. Everybody's able to talk, but we're basically equalizing. The only thing you feel is a popping sensation in your ears, just like an airplane landing. So the job of the inside attendant is to make sure you're able to pop your ears and equalize. Because if you can't, you just have to let them know right away and they stop the pressurization and they help you through it. But after the first 10 minutes, you're at pressure, and then the inside attendant will say, okay, everybody, masks on. You put your mask on and you're breathing the oxygen for 20 minutes. And our chambers are designed, custom built to have these electronic tablets that are safe to be in the chamber. And those electronic tablets, people can do brain exercises to improve their cognitive process, but they can read the New York Times. They can listen to podcasts, your podcast, whatever it is. And they're doing that for 20 minutes. And then inside the attendant, after 20 minutes, we'll say, okay, everybody, masks off for an air break. So the mask is off. And then that's our opportunity to get up, stretch, move around, talk to their neighbor. I did the full treatment myself, and in my chamber, we only had a few people. So we did planks. We did a plank competition every 5 minutes or every 20 minutes for 5 minutes.
I love it.
So it's comfortable and it becomes a fun environment in there.
All right. So you mentioned, you know, the possible dangers of, you know, we need to make sure we can clear our ears, just like if you're scuba diving, right? Like you got to clear them, you know, every so many feet that you go down. So when you're actually breathing that oxygen, is there anything that we may feel from that?
It's a great question.
Is there any danger from it?
You know, there's always a potential danger of oxygen toxicity. Too much oxygen is not a good thing. But because we're 100% oxygen for only 20 minutes, we never see oxygen toxicity. So when you're really breathing oxygen, you don't really feel much. This is more of a cumulative effect as you're going along. There's this 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for 12 weeks. So as you're going through week after week, you're starting to see some changes. But a lot of my clients will say, hey, you know, coming out of the dive, they feel a little bit more energized because they have a lot more oxygen saturated in their cells. So often when they, in our clinic, we have our gym, we have exercise physiologists training them, they feel better training right after the treatment because they're hyperoxygenated. But while you're in there, you're really not feeling anything other than those first 10 minutes in the popping sensation in the ears.
Okay, good to know. So, and you just mentioned what I was going to ask you next was, is there kind of a protocol for how many sessions that you do? Do you have to do them so many days apart within a time frame? And you mentioned it really fast, but can you run by that again, please?
Yes, of course. So our protocol, you know, the point of our protocol is to stimulate the human body to make new cells, to replace the cells that have been damaged, to grow blood vessels, and to improve energy metabolism. The best protocol to do that is doing it 2 hours a day, 5 consecutive days, and for 12 consecutive weeks. So it is a very long program. So a lot of our clients will rent a home near our clinic in Central Florida, and they will stay there and then go back and forth, you know, in the clinic and do the treatment consecutively. That protocol, it took 15 years of, you know, to figure out with all the research we've done. It needs to be that amount because the body needs that successive trigger to make enough cells to make a significant healing impact. There are some other protocols where instead of 12 weeks, it's 8 weeks, and that tends to help a little bit of the physical performance. But to get the best benefit, cognitive and physical, usually 12 weeks is the way to go.
Okay. Wow. That's a lot. 5 days a week, 2 hours a day for 12 weeks. I mean, healing from Lyme is truly a full-time job. We know this, right?
It is, for sure.
So is there any, I just want to ask this one more time. Is there any dangers to doing this, right? We talked about the ears. We talked about, you know, oxygen toxicity, which doesn't sound like that's going to be an issue there. Is there anybody that should not do this type of treatment?
For sure. The only real condition that is an absolute no-go is something called spontaneous pneumothorax. So if your lung has collapsed by itself for whatever reason, and they couldn't figure out the reason, that's spontaneous pneumothorax. And the last thing I want to do is put you in a high pressure chamber and have it spontaneously collapse again. So that's the only time it's an absolute no-go from the get-go. Now, if you had a pneumothorax, a collapsing of your lung from a trauma or something like that, we do scans of the lungs to evaluate the lungs and make sure they're stable to go in. If you're pregnant, you can't go inside the hyperbaric chamber as well. So that's always something to consider. If you have an implanted device that's not rated to dive or rated to go under pressure, that's something that might prevent you. If you have active seizures or epilepsy, too much oxygen can provoke another one. It can lower your seizure threshold. If you've never had a seizure, it's not going to cause one. But just to know, if you have a history of seizures, you need to be seizure-free for at least 6 months and controlled. And that's something our team will confirm you're safe to go in.
So pretty much if you're safe to go scuba diving, you're safe to...
Usually, if you're safe to go scuba diving, you're safe to go inside a hyperbaric chamber for the most part. But you know, that's why we do our assessment. You know, our assessment is not just to diagnose and confirm we can help you, but also to make sure you're safe to go in.
Awesome. Very, very detailed on that. I love it. But, you know, sometimes we need to reiterate these things. And sometimes I just need to ask him in a different way to clear my own head and make sure I'm getting the right information. So I appreciate you taking the time to kind of dive through that. So you mentioned earlier that you kind of have a whole team at your clinic, which I love because so many times people think, oh, okay, I have Lyme disease. Let me just go kill it, right? Like that's no. Sometimes that's the last thing you need to do, right? Like detoxing, nutrition, our nervous system, you know, emotional. It's a huge emotional process that we go through. It's oftentimes I like to, correlate it to like a grieving process, right? Like we really are going through so much trauma during this and we're grieving, you know, who we used to be. We're grieving friendships and relationships that we've lost. We're grieving finances that we've lost. We're grieving like, who are we now, right? And so there's so many stages to, I think, truly healing from this disease. And so you mentioned, you know, a nutrition team, the counseling, the whole, and I love that because there's not a lot of clinics that offer the whole package, right? You got to go here for this. Well, let me send you there for this and let me, and that's, it's a lot already, right? So that just adds to it.
For sure. No, it's it's as a physician, this is a dream to practice in because we have the whole team under one roof. Earlier
everybody
today,
works together. They can communicate together. Yeah.
Yep. You know, earlier today I had my my Monday meeting, which is a 2-hour meeting with the whole clinical team for every new client that has come through the assessment. And we go through all the results together as a team. We make sure we're on the same page. We have the right care plan and we agree on how to help the patient the best. And as we go through the treatment, every Friday, we have a 2-hour meeting to go over current clients. How are they doing in the treatment? Are they meeting their goals? Do we need to adjust? And to have that continuity under one roof, that's the way medicine should be practiced.
I agree. I really do. I went to a treatment center, 10 years ago when I finally got my diagnosis, and it was pretty good, but there were still some things I had to go outside for, you know? And so I was grateful for even have just a few different things within one building. And so to have everything in one, like it really does make it nice. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this hyperbaric is going to fix a lot of things, right? Like gonna tackle a lot of things that we're doing. Are there other things that you do? Like, is the hyperbaric, is it going to kill mold? Is it going to kill parasites? Are there supplements? Are there, what goes along with this part of it as far as, not the nutrition, not the counseling, not that, but the other stuff like herbal treatments or any other things that people may do within the clinic?
Yeah. Now the hyperbaric, we treat a lot of different conditions. So Lyme is definitely a big one. But think of anything related to the brain is something we specialize as well. So people with strokes, stroke recovery, traumatic brain injuries, no matter the cause, whether it's a fall or a car accident or whatever it is, COVID, long COVID, this is a big thing that we treat as well. People that got the initial COVID virus or even a bad reaction from the vaccine, they're having chronic issues very similarly to Lyme. And this is something we help with.
And it's from the hyperbaric?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So this protocol, we have a saying, the brain and body do not discriminate what hurts it. So whether it's Lyme or COVID or whatever the disease process, if we do the assessment, we see injury that can be healed, we know the hyperbaric will help. So that's why people come in for the full assessment. So we can say, hey, what is actually causing the damage? And also we know we can help them. And another diagnosis that always comes to mind when I talk about Lyme is fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is a pain sensory disorder. People feel pain all over, but they go through all the testing and they can't, the clinicians can't find, hey, I can't find an arthritis or a nerve, neuropathy damage or anything like that. Then
I've always said it's a syndrome name because they don't know what's wrong with you. Like, is that accurate?
Well, we know what causes it and what the origin of the issues are now. So with our research,
can you share a little bit, please?
I would love to. Fibromyalgia, we call it a pain sensory disorder because you can feel pain all over the body, but in the end, pain interpretation starts in the brain, mm-hmm. starts and ends in the brain, frankly. Now the sensory cortex, that part of the brain that is responsible for processing signals, whether it's a brush of the arm or a pinprick or a bite or an injury, the brain has to process it. And if it's not processing those signals correctly, it can misinterpret these sensations as significant pain. So when we do our analyses, when we do the assessment, there's a scan called a SPECT scan, S-P-E-C-T. A SPECT scan looks at the metabolic function of the brain. And whether it's Lyme or in fibromyalgia, we can see that sensory cortex having dysfunction. And if it is, then we say, hey, that's the cause of your fibromyalgia. You have dysfunction in that part of your brain. And if we heal that part of the brain, we can actually help your fibromyalgia. And our studies show that this part of the brain gets damaged often when there is a traumatic event. So if you suffer a traumatic event, this could be war, it could be sexual trauma, childhood trauma, doesn't matter the origin of the trauma. Your brain and your body does not want to relive that trauma over and over. Mm-hmm. And it shuts down the metabolism of that part of the brain so you don't relive it and you don't remember it as vividly. The problem is it also happens to change the metabolism of the sensory cortex that sits right next to the trauma center. So that's why people with fibromyalgia, if you really do a good history, you'll find some kind of traumatic event that happened to them. And that's why they have that dysfunction of the brain. And again, if you heal somebody's brain, you can actually heal their condition like fibromyalgia.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that kind of changed my thoughts on it because I know that was one of the diagnoses I got was fibromyalgia. And back in the day, there was actually a clinic called the Fibromyalgia Clinic. And just years afterwards, I always thought, is this even a real thing? Because I always think if you have fibromyalgia, they don't know what's wrong with you. You probably have Lyme, right? I say that a lot. Right or wrong, don't know, right? I don't want to categorize everybody, but there's so many things that, you know, this can mimic. But it sounds like you've figured out kind of the cause of it within the brain, right? And I always get hesitant when somebody says, if you have pain, it's in your brain, right? I guess that is different than it's in your head.
Correct.
Right.
I always say it's not in your head.
Yeah, because everything starts in our brain. I mean, our brain is powerful. It controls our body. And so we're not saying it's in your head, right? It's actually in your brain.
Correct. Exactly.
And there is, you know, the brain gut coordination, that just everything truly starts from your brain. We think it's, you know, really starts in our gut, but what controls our gut? Our brain, right? Yeah. So yeah. That's amazing. Gosh, we talked on so many different things. Did I miss anything here?
Honestly, it's you're doing great work. You know, the education and getting the word out is critical. You know, I tell all your listeners and anybody that's willing to talk to us, you know, we do complimentary consultations. So if anybody wants to speak to me or any of our physicians about their Lyme or any condition, we offer those for free, whether it's in person or virtual. And if we think we might be able to help you, then we say, hey, come down to our clinic in Florida. We're in an area called the Villages. I'm not sure if you're familiar. It's the largest retirement community in the United States. And when I say community, it's a city essentially of 175,000 people, an hour north of Orlando. So this is where our clinic is. And I tell people, come to our clinic for the assessment. We'll do the SPECT scan. We'll do the cognitive testing, the brain, you know, scans, the blood work, et cetera. And we'll help diagnose you. And if we think we can help, then we'll build a customized care plan. And I've seen people with no hope leave with hope and kind of a renewed life.
That's in that, you know, that's my favorite word, hope, is because we lose it during this journey, right? We don't know who to trust. We go into things saying, oh, I'm going to do another protocol, right? Well, if we go in it with no hope, if we go in it with the wrong mindset, chances are it's probably not going to work, right? Yeah. So free consultations, I love that. They can do it in person or over the phone. Now, if somebody wants to come in and do an actual consultation, whether it be the first initial one, which it still says sounds like it's free, if somebody wants to come in after the initial free consultation and do another consultation and do some of the tests for you to kind of draw up a treatment plan to decide, do you have pricing available for what that is?
Yeah. So it really depends on what kind of testing we'll need to do.
Okay.
You know, our full assessment where we do every test we typically can do, you know, it involves 3 days of testing. It involves brain scans, two different types of brain scans. I mentioned that SPECT scan as one of them, the full complement of blood work, neurological testing, cognitive testing, cardiovascular and physical testing, gait analysis, even body composition and nutrition evaluation. Over those 3 days, it could range anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $10,000, depending on what element we're doing. So that's something that free consultation will be there to kind of gauge, okay, what testing do we need? And then we would build it from that.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's good. I mean, because people can come and get all this comprehensive testing done from you. Doesn't mean they're committed to doing your treatment protocol, right? But Correct. They can still walk away with a ton of information about their body.
Yeah. I tell everybody, please, do the consultation, that free one, because I'm not here to push anything on you. But if I can help you here, great. If I can help you here, but I'll still give you advice of what I think you should do or pursue. And the same thing goes with the testing. You don't have to do the treatment if you do our testing, but that testing could help you with another treatment, somewhere else if that's what we recommend.
Right, exactly. And then since it's such a long protocol, probably 8 weeks, but definitely it sounds like the 12-week program is longer. Does your facility have like a list of, rentals that are available? Is that something that a patient can get help and guidance from your clinic on?
Absolutely. So we have a whole concierge team that will help you find a location. Because we're in the Villages, it's the largest retirement community in Florida, in the United States. So most of our homes are snowbird homes, meaning they're only there for a few months in the middle of the winter. So there are plenty of homes for rent. And most people will work with our concierge team. We have a lot of people that rent out their homes that are trusted, and most of them come with a golf cart. So the whole Villages is connected by a golf cart. So you rent a home, you get the golf cart, and then you get to explore the Villages, and you come back and forth with the clinic with the golf cart. It's part of the experience. And you get all the amenities of the Villages. So you have access to the pools and the golf courses and the rec centers, et cetera.
Okay. And actually here, I thought we were almost done, right? But I got to back up a whole lot because I have another question now based on what you just said. Because I'm like, hey, this kind of sounds like fun, cruising the town on a golf course. When people are going through this hyperbaric therapy, what is the herxing like? What do the people feel? Of course, we're different, right? And we did touch on herx a little bit earlier, but I guess I apologize. I did not kind of ask you even further into how do we feel while we're going through this 12-week protocol?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the timeline could be very different for everybody. But on average, most people, the first couple of weeks, are feeling good. They're feeling energized. And then about 4 or 5 weeks into the treatment, that's when the herx is coming on. Because that's when we're really destroying the biofilm, the spirochete's releasing its toxin, and you're starting to feel the symptoms. And the symptoms are really based on what symptoms you had from the beginning. So some people, they're feeling a rash or achiness or fatigue, headaches. It can range. And it definitely doesn't last the rest of the treatment. It'll last a couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks, depending on how severe the condition is. And you kind of break through that. A lot of our clients call it hitting the wall. And then once you pass that, then you renewed with energy and you continue to heal and improve. And then by the time the treatment is done, you're feeling great, but you're actually going to have continued improvement even after you finish. Part of the reason it's a 12-week protocol is the stem cells and all the triggers of healing will continue to progress even after you leave. So for our kind of our full comprehensive package, where we do testing, we do the 12-week treatment, we do the post-testing, and then you go home, and we actually invite you to come back 6 months later to repeat parts of the testing. That's my favorite meeting, because most people are at their best at the 6 month mark after treatment.
Okay, that's a good thing. So how soon can we feel like we're getting better? So about 6 months is a really good mark as a follow-up time.
Yeah, that's a great follow-up time, and people are at their best, but doesn't mean you won't be feeling better during or right after the treatment either.
Okay. Awesome. I'm sure if I sat here long enough, I could think of a million more questions to ask you, because this has really been so insightful. And just, I love to learn new information along with hopefully the listeners, right, that have taken away a lot of good tips from this call. So Dr. Mo, I appreciate you. I appreciate what your clinic is doing. And again, listeners, in the description of this episode, I'll have all the links in any way that you can reach out to Dr. Mo and his clinic. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanya. Thank you for having me.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.